If Indiana's prison system were a city, it'd be a boom town. Population figures for the past decade show it's grown more than 6 times faster than the state as a whole. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, an expert panel will consider the cost, in financial terms and otherwise, of just locking them up and throwing away the key. Should the state dial back sentences for drug offenders and other nonviolent criminals and give judges more flexibility to mete out justice as they see fit? What do you tell the family of someone victimized by an offender who's gotten out of prison early? And does advocating sentencing reform necessarily make a lawmaker soft on crime? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park, 4 locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy in a field.
The number of inmates in Indiana has jumped 40% in the past decade to about 29,000. If the trend holds and the inmate population here continues to grow 3 times faster than in neighboring states, Indiana will have close to 35,000 inmates by 2017. And that could cost Hoosier taxpayers an additional $1.2 billion. Governor Mitch Daniels is calling for a new, smarter approach to incarcerating those who break the law in Indiana, one that he says matches the place of punishment to their true danger to society. Joining me to talk about the governor's call for reform are Republican Senator Brent Steele of Bedford, chairman of the Senate Committee on Corrections, Criminal and Civil Matters, and the author of sentencing reform legislation now working its way through the General Assembly, Larry Landis, Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council, Steve Johnson, Executive Director of the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council, and former two-term Wayne County Sheriff Matt Strittmatter, a past president of the Indiana Sheriff's Association and now a consultant with Advanced Correctional Healthcare. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion. You know, when I first went to the State House as a reporter, it was back in the summer of 1988, and I remember one of the first stories I think I wrote as a new beat reporter on at the State House was on Indiana's bulging prisons and how people were being sent there for long periods of time. Larry Landis, you've been in your current position since 1980.
1980.
So you've seen it.
I have seen it.
How did Indiana become, when did Indiana become the devil's island, if you will, of the Midwest?
Well, starting in about 1978, the year after they passed the penal code, every year since then, the legislature has created new crimes and enhanced sentences, for 30 years. So you keep on ratcheting up the penalties, often because a constituent goes to a legislator and says, I'm not satisfied with the outcome of a case, and sometimes it may be because a prosecutor, made a plea agreement because they didn't have the evidence to get a conviction. But in any event, it usually turns out that the only thing that satisfies the constituent is something's wrong with the law. And so we need to increase the penalty and sometimes take away discretion of the judges so that they don't have a choice as to what sentence to impose. And you do 30 years of that and you get the war on drugs, the successive war on drugs, and you get penalties for some offenses that are so out of proportion to the offense that you get to be the nation's leader in prison population increase.
Well, and I've mentioned some statistics at the top of the show, and that's one I didn't mention, was that last year Indiana had the fastest growing prison population in the entire country. We're number one, I guess. Is that something to be proud of or embarrassed by?
To some constituents, they'll say that that's a great position to be in. A lot of your citizens, we in our society, we want the law to take care of the prisoner. A lot of time it's out of sight, out of mind to the people back home. But we here at the state, once we have them in our possession and we've warehoused them, so to speak, we've got to take care of them. It reminds me of the argument between the brain and the intestines, who was the most important organ in the body, and everybody thought that the brain was the most important, but when the intestines shut down, they found out who really controlled everything, and that's just the way our prison system is. It's not pretty, it's not sexy, it's hard business, But most every one of these people are eventually going to come out and hit the streets someday, and we've got to deal with them. And people back home, they're gone out of their community. They've been arrested. They've gone through the trial and they're sentenced. And it's somebody else's problem, and it grows. And to those people back home, it's a good thing.
Well, Matter, you were in the trenches dealing with law enforcement, both as a state police sergeant and then, of course, as an elective sheriff in Wayne County for 8 years. You had the perspective of being on a border county right there in Richmond, abutting Ohio. And Larry Landis a moment ago mentioned some of the sentences that have maybe gotten out of sync, some would argue, with other states. Let's look at, say, dealing 3 or more grams of cocaine. If that happened on your side of the arch there in Wayne County, it's basically potentially 20 years to 50 years in prison.
Potential's there, yeah.
If you go on the other side of the arch across the Ohio border, it's probation to maximum of 1 year. Does that make sense?
It does not make sense. It really doesn't. You know, the problem that I've seen, and when I left office the first of last month, I left a 33-year career in law enforcement, and I've seen a lot of the changes that the senator was referring to, and what Mr. Landis was referring to. You know, we've perpetuated the problem by increasing the penalties, and I think the senator made a very good point. The judges at times are restricted as to from any discretion as to what they can do when sentencing people. You know, we're as a sheriff, you know, we were starting to see the overpopulation of the prison system, if you will, because we were, Wayne County, for example, was a housing facility for the Department of Corrections. You know, we got paid a small per diem per day per inmate. It's $35 a day, and that per diem was actually enacted in 1988, and the cost has gone up to house the offenders. On the flip side, if I had to send someone to DOC for safekeeping, you know, then I would be paying at least $50 to $55 a day. So they're out of balance there. We opened a new jail in Wayne County in 2006, in August of 2000, I'm sorry, August of 2004. And, you know, I had been making the point, you know, we're building a larger facility. You know, we went from a 168-bed jail to a 418-bed facility. And I said, you know, we're building this, and it's going to, the population is going to increase dramatically. And within the first couple of years, you know, we saw an increase of about 40%. From the time we opened to 2 years later.
So it's growth is a
growing problem.
Well, Steve Johnson, you represent, of course, prosecutors across the state, and as Larry Landis said, a lot of times victims, families will come and say, "Hey, that was not harsh enough. I want to see harsher penalties." And of course, your constituency—they're the people who hear that and are dealing with those victims and those families. Is that what's happened, or is it simply they've said there is a call for tougher sentencing and we're going to try to deliver it?
Well, I think that's an interesting discussion, because no doubt you do see enhancements in sentences for those reasons every year. But the other thing that the Council of State Governments and the Pew Center found, that Indiana has more time cuts than any other state in the country. We find more ways to let people out the back door than anyone else. And, for example, last year, yeah, we had a penalty enhancement. If you're a drunk driver and you kill a law enforcement animal, that becomes a Class D felony. But we're not going to fill up our prisons with that. But since 1977, when our last penal code reform was done, we have continued to think of ways to get people out the back door. And we've given judges more discretion over the years. Back when we passed our 77 penal code, we did have 50%. But if you had any prior conviction, even if you now commit a Class D felony, it was non-suspendable. And the entire sentence was non-suspendable back then. We didn't have earned credit time. We didn't have a lot of the programs we have now. So, yes, we have increased penalties in certain limited areas, but over the years we've also backed things out. And it's one of the reasons that Larry and I, and actually his prosecutors, proposed the sentencing policy, or sentencing commission, to look at both ends, both at the low end, supposed nonviolent offenders and property crimes, but also the high end, because The time cuts have meant that even for the very worst offenders, they're going to get out fairly early, I think, compared to most jurisdictions. So I think we really needed a comprehensive look at the entire penal code.
And why do you think it's been so long since we've seen that comprehensive look? You mentioned, Steve, that now the state had retained the services of two nonpartisan think tanks, the Pew Center and the Council of State Governments, to look at this issue. They've spent months doing so and came back with a report that received the endorsement of the governor and, of course, the Criminal Code Evaluation Commission, on which several of you, in fact, served. In fact, I don't think they could have a quorum if during this taping of this show, because you're all here. But Larry Landis, what you've called for this kind of reform every year.
Yes.
You're a frequent guest on this show.
Yes.
When we talk about these things. Why did it take this long?
The politics of crime, primarily, because everybody recognizes that the penalties have gotten out of proportion to the offenses, and we cannot continue this mindless, let's just lock them up and throw away the key, because they are coming back. They are coming out. And so, we're going to need to adjust penalties. We're going to need to increase treatment. And that is hard for some legislators to vote for, knowing that the one thing they look at when they're voting at that package is, what's the attack ads going to look like when I run for re-election? And if you look at it through the filter of the fear of the re-election and the attack ads, they're going to have a hard time voting for reforming criminal justice, because to some people it might look like soft on crime. And it's hard to distinguish what is soft on crime, what is smart on crime. That's sometimes a very, it's hard to answer that in an 8-second soundbite.
But there's another aspect on that too. This is one of the, I've been here since 94 in one capacity or the other, either in the House or the Senate. And this is one of the hardest pieces of legislation I've ever worked on. Luke Kinley says it's one of the most complex pieces he's ever worked on. Give you an example, this incentive and disincentive fund, which was established in this bill to encourage your local communities to handle their defelonies locally. The more you send to DOC, the less money you would get back from the state. The more you deal with it locally, the more you would get back for probation, community corrections, problem-solving courts, home detentions, these kinds of things. Well, what about the probation department that just puts the defendant on routine probation, provides him no services, but doesn't send him to DOC? Why should that county receive any incentive funds back for that defendant who's actually receiving no services whatsoever? Just the verification of whether or not they are getting their drug or alcohol treatment. How do you verify what's going on locally? Should that county get any money back to them, and then funding it on the top end? The second thing, we don't have clear data in Indiana. I think we'll all agree on this. The way we do our sentencing, and in the bill, I've stated that the summer sentencing policy study committee, we need a comprehensive packet that all courts have available to them, not just a few, that has a. And we need our probation parole judges, prosecutors, the public defenders. We need to come together and decide what information we need. Why is that person being revoked? Why is he in jail? We don't have any information, uniform information that follows the defendant from year to year in his lifetime, and we need that.
So a lack of data and perhaps a lack of money at the county level. Was that a concern for?
No, I mean,
would be a concern for you, Matt?
Absolutely, because with the new property tax reforms that went into place last year, what went into the Constitution last year, local governments are going to be struggling to make ends meet financially. So we have to look at the broader picture of how are we going to handle this at the local level with limited funding.
Let's jump into Senate Bill 561, which of course is the bill, in fact, that you, Senator Brent Steele, have authored. Steve Johnson, I want to make sure I get you in here as well in this round. What prosecutors, you were of course on the commission, which put forth this proposal, and I think it was unanimous support at that point, but there's been a lot of friction from again, your constituents, from prosecutors.
Right, and I did have three prosecutors serve with me on putting together 561, but I've got 91 elected prosecutors on the board of directors, and they weren't happy with all the drug proposals in there. Now, we did offer a counterproposal, which still saves, I think, latest fiscal I've seen, 1,100 beds for DOC. And here you have prosecutors supporting and getting out in front and saying, we will support reductions in drug penalties. And I don't think you see that very often. Of course, it's not what perhaps Larry wanted in terms of how far we go, but that's rather remarkable. But we also support, as an entire package, reductions in theft penalties, forgery, and other things. But our concern was, if we're really going to save prison beds, and with all the time cuts we've had in the past, we need to do something. We need to look at the worst offenders, because I'll give you an example. Let's take a typical rape case. Doesn't beat the woman up, it just rapes the woman. Now that is a 6 to 20 year sentence, a Class B felony. But the way our sentencing works, unless you've got aggravating circumstances, perhaps a criminal history or something else like that, the judge typically is going to give the advisory sentence, which is 10 years. Well, if he behaves in prison, that's down to 5 years right off the bat. If he gets all the earned credit time he can, and a lot of them do at the Class B and Class A felony level, that's down to 1 year, because 4 years off five is down to one. And if it's taken a year to get the trial, which it often would for a rape, that's another year off. So you're almost at the position in a rape case where you tell the victim that he's not going to do any time, that he's almost going to, we almost owe him time and an apology for even trying him. And that's what's going on.
And of course, that's why prosecutors have pushed for, and at this point, gained an amendment that would require certain Class A and Class B felonies, people convicted of those crimes, to serve 85%.
Right.
As opposed to, as you say now, maybe 50% or less with good time and education credits. You know, Senator, you've said several times that this is about, you know, locking up the people we're afraid of, not the people we're mad at. Elaborate on that.
Well, that's exactly it. Our society, I think, has an expectation when you have the most heinous crimes in your community. The ones that, you know, the check forger doesn't excite me very much, but the guy who molests and maybe kills my neighbor's 8-year-old granddaughter, that's the kind of thing that rips the heart out of the community. So, yes, there is a societal and a legitimate societal concern for these kinds of things. They don't want to see what they consider the worst of the worst getting light sentences.
And, of course, the legislation as it stands now would give lighter sentences to those nonviolent offenders, those Class D offenders. And, in fact, because of the reclassification, some people who are involved in, I guess, what could be described as minor thefts below $750, that would be a misdemeanor under this proposal. Larry Landis, are you concerned that people will be out there with their Edmunds car guide saying, well, this one has a value of below $750, so I'll steal this one because it's a misdemeanor, but I don't want to steal the caddy over there. Is that it?
No, I think we have a misguided belief that deterrence somehow has much more impact on criminal behavior than it does. I doubt that. In fact, most people who are committing those crimes don't know what it's classified as, to tell you the truth. And they really don't think about the punishment. The real deterrence is the fear of apprehension. It's the fear of arrest for most people. And then it becomes pretty arbitrary and abstract as to whether, well, the punishment might be a year, might be 2 years or 5 years. I mean, the deterrence is really in the low end of that. In like drug cases is really a perfect example. We can incapacitate people who we are concerned about our public safety, like rapists, robbers. They should be incapacitated because doing that prevents crimes. If you got a serial rapist, you incarcerate them, they're not committing crimes. Drugs are completely different because it's demand-driven. So if you incarcerate a street dealer, if there's still a buyer with money and they want drugs, that crime is still going to get committed because there's going to be an entrepreneur that's going to enter the marketplace, and they're going to procure drugs if it's in the stream of commerce and provide that buyer with that drug.
So this isn't more likely to make somebody commit a crime because they think they'll get off quick.
So incarceration doesn't prevent the crime, is what I'm saying. And deterrence is going to, you know, it's a diminishing return. You're going to get a deterrence at the low end, but there's really no, you don't buy any deterrence between 5 years and 10 years or 20 years. And that's the problem we're trying to identify, is let's identify where we're wasting resources, not getting any return on the investment, and reinvestment in the places where we can get a return on the investment.
Matt Strittmatter, do you buy that?
Well, I think there, you know, we all understand that, you know, government's fundamental responsibility is to protect our protect our citizens. That's our number one priority as a governmental body. You know, Larry brought up a good point about the drug abuse situation. You know, about 80%, 80 to 85% of the people in the system currently, both county jails and in the prison system, have some type of a substance abuse problem. And I'm not certain that court-ordered substance abuse treatment always works. And I say that because, you know, we've got a treatment center in Richmond called Hope House. And my wife and I serve as a consulting member of the board. My wife's on the is on the board of directors as a voting member. You know, one of the things that we see when true substance abuse treatment is effective is when the person hits rock bottom and they feel that they have nowhere else to go. I'm not sure how we address that legislatively. I really don't have the answer for that. But I do know that if we can somehow get the person who's incarcerated into some type of a treatment program, and we had a treatment program in Wayne County, and to continue that once they get into the system and out, and to follow through with the treatment once the person's released, we may have a better opportunity to eliminate that problem for that person, because they can be put onto a track where they understand recovery from substance abuse is a day-by-day thing.
We're almost out of time, unfortunately, but Senator, let me ask you, you know, you're shepherding this bill. One of the concerns, which is an interesting task, yes, what we've heard today. One of the concerns is, of course, that the governor's pushing this for the money-saving reason. If, in fact, you accede to the wishes of the prosecutors and so forth who say, you know, 85% serve time for these most violent offenders, you're not going to get the savings necessarily that had been hoped for. Does that take the wind out of the proverbial sails of this bill?
That's my fun job, is trying to get something that everybody likes. And as in all legislation, I'm not going to please everybody, but everybody's realistic enough to understand that I can't get this bill through the legislature if I have a major group against it. I've got to reach somehow in a balance that financially works. And it is a monumental task, because it doesn't make any sense to do this if it doesn't actually get us one step further down the road to reform. And the governor's right. We've got to make this thing financially work.
All right. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end it there. I apologize. We could go on. In fact, we may have to continue after we stop taping, because this is a very good discussion. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Brent Steele of Bedford, Larry Landis, Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council, Steve Johnson, Executive Director of the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council, and former Wayne County Sheriff Matt Strittmatter. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, are township officials the bedrock of representative government or an unnecessary relic of pioneer days? To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week, I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, and as far as I know, a man who's never spent time behind bars. You've been in front of plenty of bars, but never behind, unless you want to fess up to something now.
I'll take the fifth, John.
All right, you're under the bright
fifth
lights.
Fifth Amendment.
There's a lot, as anybody who listened to that roundtable can attest now, there's a lot to this bill, lots of pieces and parts that need to work together probably for this to pass. Can this all happen this session?
This is a huge undertaking, and it's required a lot of hearings. It's required a lot of massaging here and there. It's required a lot of different interests coming together, as we even saw, you know, in the show today. And it's going to be a very difficult task. But in order to make the budget work, the state budget work, some of these things have to be done this session. I think that if some of the legislators and the other folks involved from the law enforcement side had their druthers, it would be a two-year process. But it's going to have to result in something happening this session.
Well, let's talk about the dollars and cents of this. The idea behind it, of course, is to save money. But the concessions for prosecutors and the other, the law and order faction, if you will, in terms of having people serve longer sentences for certain class A and B felonies, doesn't that basically negate the savings and put Indiana right back where it is now in terms of savings?
There's a trade-off between the short term and the long term, and some of the changes that we've seen just in the last week or two in the measure that bring it more into basically comport with the federal kind of sentencing guidelines on the more heinous crimes really means that you're going to see some longer term enhancements. And some people have even scoffed that, you know, what we've seen is a sentencing reduction package turn into or morph into a sentence enhancement package. But there have to be some trade-offs along the line, and as Larry Landis indicated, people are going to take some political hits for this, even though the governor has promised to protect people who are accused of being soft on crime.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, he has said that if anybody tried to attack people who vote for this, he says, hey, prosecutors are for it, law enforcement's for it, I'm for it. Does that provide adequate cover?
No. You know, that cannot simply counteract the 30-second attack ads and all of the mailers that we've seen in past legislative campaigns. It's going to be a very difficult task for the governor.
All right, Ed. Thanks, as always. Appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. Take care.
When bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure,
you can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.